You say you did it. I say you didn't. You say you worked hard. I say so did I. You say you worked hard. I say so did I. I say you got lucky. You say I didn't try. So you say it all worked. I say not for me. You say I didn't try. I say you just don't see why. You say I didn't try. I ask, can't you cry? You ask, why should I? I ask as I sigh. Why can't you see it? If we exist as I, too few will make it if we are only I. Folks, that's the whole question in life is how much do we care about others and how much do we sacrifice a little bit to make our world a better place? We're going to talk about all kinds of issues on this show. This is Lehigh Valley Discourse on WDIY, and I'm your host, Alan Jennings.
Employment is at record highs, and yet the wage growth normally associated with full employment is sputtering at best. The stock market is hopping, creating wealth for those who can play. Too few can. Our world is a scary place, but diplomacy appears to be out of style. It's been 153 years since slavery was abolished, and yet African Americans continue to be treated like second-class citizens. Women are running for office in greater numbers than ever, and yet they are still being groped on national television. The planet is a bake oven, and yet we are retreating on the kinds of measures that can ease the pressure on our environment. The world is in desperate need of unity, and yet we are increasingly divided. In little more than 55 days, Americans can rewrite their future or ride the wave by exercising their right to vote, and yet most will stay home. The candidates for the new 7th Congressional District in Pennsylvania are doing their part to stimulate participation by agreeing to an unprecedented number of forums at which they can educate and stir voters by sharing their views. I'm Alan Jennings. By day and night and weekends, for that matter, and my whole life, I'm the executive director of the Community Action Committee of the Lehigh Valley. But for WDIY's purposes, I'm the host of tonight's forum, brought to you by the good people at WDIY. In the studio with me and program director Neil Heaver, a couple of reporters are Marty Nostein, the Republican, Tim Sophies, the Libertarian, and Susan Wild, the Democrat. I'm honored to host this forum. I will tell you that if you are looking for a nasty fight, you're going to be disappointed. This show is called Lehigh Valley Discourse, and I fully intend to keep this civil with reasoned discussion. Personal attacks will be blocked. Long, windy responses to questions will be cut off, and rebuttals will we're not going to have any ability to characterize the opponent's view. We are only going to hear the opponent's view and then not have the, or the candidate's view and not have the opponent recharacterize that view. It's going to be hard to do, but I think it's important that everybody hear from the candidates themselves what they think on the opinions as opposed to their opponents reinterpreting it for them. Let's see if we can make this work. First, what I'd like to do is give each of the candidates an opportunity to do a two-minute elevator speech on why the 7th Congressional District voters should send you to Washington to represent them in our nation's capital. So let's start with Marty Nostein.
Thank you, Alan. My name is Marty Nostein, and I am running for the Pennsylvania 7th Congressional District as well as the 15th. And for me, I was drawn to this race, and more importantly, to run because I care a lot about the people of the 7th District. I'm also very tired and frustrated with the anger and the gridlock we've been seeing in Washington, D.C. The partisan anger, to me, is something that we need to do without. And a lot of times what we're seeing is, both sides of the aisle would rather see each other lose than have the American people win. And at times, it's reflecting what's happening right here in the Lehigh Valley. Now, with that being said, I will say we had great representation with Congressman Charlie Dent over the last several years. We have some very big shoes to fill with Congressman Dent departing, and it gives us an incredible opportunity to elect somebody that is going to be a voice for all the people of this congressional district, somebody who's going to go down to Washington, fight for the values that matter most to the people of this district, and be a champion of all the people of this 7th congressional district. So I'm hoping your listeners will, listen to my points of view, come to a conclusion that I am the best candidate in this race, and elect me to Washington, to Congress, and so I can go to Washington, D.C. and represent all their values.
Just to be clear, I'm going by alphabetical order the first time, and I'm going to try to give each person a rotating chance to go first. Tim Silfies.
Thanks, Alan. So my name's Tim Silfies. My last stop, I've been a reporter for, well, I've been in the media for 15 years. Last stop was a reporter for Channel 69 News. So I'm running as a libertarian in this race outside of the two major establishment parties because I basically just decided that I felt like somebody had to do it. Over my career, I've watched the way that the two major parties have done really nothing except enrich their own power, consolidate in Washington, and basically set up a system where they take care of themselves, big business, special interests, and they leave all of us behind with mountains of debt, endless war, and bloated, ineffective government. So, you know, my stop working at 69 News, I saw that all the time, talking to people all around our community, and I heard the same refrains over and over about, I'm tired of the nonsense, I'm tired of the noise, we need regular folks outside of the system to go to Washington. So I decided to leave my job there and pursue that. It's been rewarding so far. I've knocked on thousands of doors all around the district, and I feel like people are really receptive to the idea of having something different in Washington outside of the two major parties. So I'm looking forward to talking about the issues, and hopefully we can reach some agreement and some conclusions.
I didn't consider the attacks on the two parties to be, quote, personal, but it might have felt a little personal to the two candidates. Next, Susan Wilde, the Democrat.
Thank you, Alan. Thanks for having us. I'm Susan Wilde. I grew up in a household with a father who was military, but more importantly, spent every waking moment worrying about money. After dinner every night, he would pull out a little spiral notebook and he would go through our family finances endlessly. And he drilled into me a fear of debt. Fast forward years later, and I had put myself through college. I was in law school. I was working two jobs and trying to get by, paying my tuition and carrying a full course load. And it got to be too much. So despite this long-held fear of debt, I took out student loans. And at the end, I was able to quit one of my jobs right away. My grades went up. I graduated. I got a good job, and I paid back those loans. To me, that's the way good government is supposed to work. I am an example of what can happen when our government invests in its future. Unfortunately, too many people nowadays are not getting that kind of opportunity. We're moving away from that. Young people don't have the access to education and higher education and training programs that they should. Washington is being controlled and dictated by corporate interests and the ultra-rich. I believe we can change that. I believe we can change who we send to Washington. I think we can send people to Washington who want to work for the people. I think that we can make education affordable and accessible for young people today. I think we can make healthcare affordable and accessible. And I think we can pass tax bills that benefit all of us, not just the ultra rich. I think it's time for us to return to the kind of government where parents can say to their children with confidence that with hard work and a dream, they too can make it in this world.
Okay. It seems to me, you're going to hear questions that are loaded because it's my show. I get to do this. I don't think of the president as a diplomat. Does that matter that the president is diplomatic? So let's start with Tim this time, and if you could comment on the president's approach to diplomacy and foreign affairs, I think that would be important.
Yeah, of course, I think it's very important for the president to be a diplomat. And, I have certainly been dissatisfied with some of the way that this president conducts himself with foreign policy, especially in terms of how he deals with other countries. That said, I mean, there are good things and bad things, I guess, is the way I would look at it. Like, I could have done without the fire and fury and the extreme kind of hardcore rhetoric towards North Korea. But on the other hand, I liked it when he ended up sitting down with them. I think that was a good thing, and I think we should be moving as much as we can towards peace with other nations, and as much as possible. I take a non-interventionist stance about foreign policy, where I don't think we should be involved in places where, unless we've been attacked by another country, I don't think that we should be at war with them. So I think we should be pursuing peace as much as possible at all times. And the times when he does that, I think it's good. You know, again, back to the North Korea example, it's since then it's proven to be a little problematic because, again, he sort of, I think he goes too much from swinging from side to side about it. In other words, effusively praising the North Korean regime has sort of been counterproductive. But overall, I think we should always work towards peace. And when he does that, I think it's good.
Susan Wild, is the president a diplomat, and does it matter?
I think it matters tremendously. I think the United States needs to get back to being a diplomatic leader in this world. We have seen the evisceration of the State Department and the diplomatic corps in this country, and that troubles me greatly. We need to work with our allies. We're not doing that. I think that I'm not discouraged by the fact that he sat down with Putin and the leader of North Korea, but there has to be follow-up to those things. I don't think that our president should be bending over for autocrats at the expense of the people who lead the countries that we have long considered to be our allies. And by taking away our diplomatic corps, by eviscerating our State Department and not filling the positions that are there, we've eliminated the ability to have good, meaningful follow-up to what the president has claimed are our initial steps towards peace with North Korea and other countries. So I really think that diplomacy is becoming a lost art, and we need to return to that.
Marty Nelstein.
Absolutely. You know, we need diplomacy, and our president right now, I would have to say, is somebody who is willing to sit down with certain leaders and trying to work things out. I'm also in the belief that I don't necessarily think we need to be a nation builder, and we do need to make sure that we take care of America first. Our president at this time is the ultimate outsider. He does things a bit untraditional. I think everybody around this table and listening cringes at times. But at times, I think the intent is good, and maybe the delivery isn't good. But diplomacy is very important, and we as a world leader need to make sure that we lead the charge in that area.
You're listening to Lehigh Valley Discourse on WDIY. I'm your host, Alan Jennings, and I have the honor of having the three candidates running for the 7th Congressional District seat and to go to Washington, Tim Sophies, Susan Wild, and Marty Nelstein. Let's rule out the Appropriations Committee, but ask, to which committee do you most hope to be appointed and why? Susan, I think we're starting with you this time.
Alan, my whole reason for wanting to go to Congress is to work for working families in the 7th District. So the committees, first of all, let me just say I would be honored to be in a position of being able to be on a committee in Congress. But the committees that I would choose, if given a choice, would be those that I think would most directly affect the people of the 7th District. And I've given this a lot of thought. Transportation and infrastructure would be among my first choices. Infrastructure, I think, is self-evident. Transportation, I think one of the great problems we have in the Lehigh Valley is that we're in a central location in terms of being very, very close to New York and Philadelphia, but without any good kinds of mass transportation, and I think that's a problem. I'd also be very, very interested in being on the Committee for Education and Workforce for the same reason. I think those are issues that affect working families. And finally, oversight and government reform are key interests of mine, government reform in particular, and I would like to very much to work on a campaign finance reform bill when in Congress.
Marty Nostein.
Yes, small business committee and also, agriculture. So small business, I'm a small business owner. I built a business from the ground up. I still own and operate that business today, and it was very difficult to start a business. We just take off some of the, or remove some of the red tape that's necessary to start businesses. We encourage people to, who have entrepreneurial spirits to open businesses, start businesses. So that's very near and dear to my heart. And the Ag Committee is near and dear to my heart. I own and operate my family farm. Agriculture is very, very important to the state of Pennsylvania and also to this region as well.
Tim Silfies.
I would not be holding my breath on being put on any committees if I went to Washington, being not a part of either one of the major parties. I think it would be certainly put me in a unique position of being sort of an outsider that could work with both sides at different times. That said, I would be interested in finance committee. I mean, we have $21 trillion in debt, approaching $22 trillion, which is, that is something that will affect all of us. And I worry about our kids and my nephews and niece, thinking about where that's going to lead us. So that's one that comes to mind.
Okay, I have one question that is unique to each of you. I'm going to start this with Marty. Marty, I would put myself among the ranks of those who believe that climate change due to human behavior is a threat to the human species. It seems new evidence, fires, hurricanes, flooding, heat spells, come out at us almost every day, much of which is deadly. What is your position on whether and how we save ourselves, or at least our grandchildren at this point?
Well, that's a great question. And, you know, if you, as you obviously have been, you know, we have some extremes now in our weather and patterns. It's something that is still being studied tremendously. Our population is growing. We have tried to roll back certain regulations, to increase business growth as well. But at times, you know, that could hurt our environment. As a guy who has protected hundreds of acres of his own property, the environment is very important to me. Open space is very important to me. These are things that are near and dear to my heart. So, you know, we need to look at better ways of transporting goods. We need to look at better ways of taking care of our environment and our earth, because without that, I mean, obviously we're in some dire needs. But, you know, so for me, you know, I do have, you know, I will say this, I haven't bought into the entire global warming issue yet. You know, you do look at extremes at times, and, you know, we might see certain highs, you know, a year or two ago. But if you look back at the, the previous temperature at that point, or the previous snowstorm, it's 50, 60 years before that. So it's all over the map right now. But I cannot snap my fingers on how to fix it, but it's something that is on my radar.
Let me go. Tim, just want to tell you, you're being saved by the fact that we need to take a break. So it'll give you a minute to think about your answer to the. Oh, actually, it won't, because I'm not giving you the question yet.
You can go ahead and give it to
we're
me.
We're going to take a break. You're listening to Lehigh Valley Discourse on WDIY 88.1 FM. Stay with us.
Spread the word about your business or organization to a well-informed audience. Become an underwriter with WDIY. Our lineup of NPR news and locally produced programs reaches thousands of engaged listeners in the Lehigh Valley and beyond. Underwriting on WDIY is an affordable and effective way to provide information about your product and services to people who care. To learn more about underwriting opportunities, 610-694-8100, extension 6, or WDIY.org.
Hope you're impressed by the quality of the candidates that you have to consider on November 6th for the 7th Congressional District seat that was newly created as a result of successful challenge of Pennsylvania's gerrymandering. Okay, so this one's for Tim Silfies. I don't want to oversimplify what it means to be a libertarian, but libertarians tend to hate government. If government should be minimized, who is going to stop people from dumping pollutants into the streams and guarantee every school-age child can get a decent education and make sure that workers have safe workplaces and make a decent wage?
This is a quintessentially American philosophy. What it's about is a focus on individual liberty and still having common sense limited government. Limited government that in which the federal government protects our rights recognized in the Constitution and then lets us live how we want as long as we don't hurt anybody else. Common sense, minimal government. That's what it's about. Delegating strength from the federal government out to states and local governments, empowering people like you who have spent your whole life dedicated.
No sucking up to the host.
No, but no, look, I don't mean that in that kind of way. I mean, look, I get it that you're a progressive, but you also, in a weird way, I was thinking about this as I was getting ready for this. You're a very kind of libertarian story. You see problems in front of you and you try to fix them. You see people who need things and you try to help them.
I wish I had a better record, but thanks for that, Tim.
But it's true. And that's what this is about. It's about tackling things at a local level and seeing problems in front of you and doing your best to fix them and help people who need help.
Okay, Susan Wild, here you go. I'm going to start. Let me just start with the point. I think regular folks are sick of politics. They're sick of the media. They're sick of institutions that let them down. They're so sick of it, they're bailing out and not participating, or they're voting for people who seem to be the most disconnected outsiders. And I think they believe Democrats are just as bad as Republicans, if not worse, because Democrats have certain principles that they seem all too willing to sell in the interest of raising money. How will you be different, and what kinds of policy changes do you think could correct that problem?
Alan, I think you're right that voters are feeling discouraged, and I think a big reason that we see lower voter turnout and that kind of discouragement is because people perceive, probably correctly, that Washington is run by special interests and corporate interests. I have pledged that I will not take any corporate PAC money. And the reason for that is because I think it's very, very important that when people go to Washington to vote on important policy issues, that they're not in the back pocket of the industry that they're then being asked to vote on. An example would be taking money from health insurance companies and then voting on a health reform package. So I think that the only way for voters and citizens to start to feel more engaged in our process is first and foremost to get big money out of politics. The second thing is that we are way too polarized. And we all know this. One of the skills that I pride myself most on are my negotiation skills. I've spent 35 years as a lawyer, 30 years of that as a litigator. My job every single day when I'm not running for Congress, my job is to bring about resolutions of disputes. I've gotten pretty good at it. I go to court when I have to go to court, but none of my clients ever want to go to court. So my job has always been to try to find a common middle ground that will work for both sides to a dispute. That's a skill that is very much transferable to Congress. But first and foremost, I think people have to be convinced that their interests, the things that Washington is going to work on, are not being outsourced to corporate interests.
Should there be a minimum wage? And if so, how much should it be? Keep in mind that the background on this is that we've had great economic growth, full employment economy. The basic laws of supply and demand should be driving up wages. They're not. So should there be a minimum wage? And if so, how much should it be? Marty?
Well, there is a minimum wage.
Right.
Yeah.
Do you believe there should be one? Do you agree that there should be one?
Yes, I do. But, you know, and I also think the minimum wage should be dictated by the markets, and states could set their minimum wage as well. And because the economy is doing so well, several retail businesses have increased their minimum wage. We do have an established minimum wage. Minimum wage jobs should be viewed as a stepping stone to better jobs. Better the economy will drive up the minimum wage as well. And we're seeing that with certain retail customers or businesses, I should say.
Sorry, Marty, I didn't mean to cut you off. Tim Silfies.
So when I was the business reporter for 69 News, I saw this all the time, talking to business owners when there was the debate about whether the minimum wage should go up to 12,
usually
even 15.
Stirred by me.
Usually by you, right. And I heard from people the effect that these laws have on business owners. And you know as well that these are the engines of providing jobs for neighborhoods that need them and helping people get out of poverty by having jobs. And I have heard from pizza shop owners, people across the board describing to me what this means. When it makes it more expensive to run their businesses, it makes it harder to hire people. It makes it harder to invest in new equipment and resources. And this has a ripple effect through an economy where the people we want to help end up getting hurt. And that's the problem, and it makes it harder for businesses to expand. So I think that's something that always has to be kept in mind when we're talking about expanding the minimum wage as much as – I know you've advocated, I think, for a $12 minimum wage at the last point.
Well, we tried for years to get the state legislature to bump it to 10-10, and we gave up on that. Personally, I think it should be closer to 15, but I'm not the one running for Congress here.
Well, and so but I mean,
I get to get off the hook on that one.
The effects of a $15 minimum wage would be, I mean, it would really, respectfully, I think it would really damage economic growth, and it would end up hurting the people. There are unintended consequences for interventions like that.
The good news is I'm not the one running here, so
that's
true. I'm not going to argue with you, Tim. Susan Wild, what do you feel about the minimum wage?
I do believe there must be a minimum wage. It needs to be a living wage. The current federal minimum wage is $7.25 an hour, which is abysmal. We live in a state that follows that $7.25 an hour minimum wage. I think we absolutely must phase in a higher minimum wage and get to $15 an hour. I think there has to be a cost of living adjustment in higher cost societies or neighborhoods or communities. I think that what people overlook is that the more money that we put into the pockets of the average worker, the more those workers are able to consume the kinds of things that build our economy. Ultimately, the more money we are putting into workers' pockets, the more we are going to build our economy in the long run.
You're listening to Lehigh Valley Discourse on WDIY. I'm your host, Alan Jennings. I have the honor of having a conversation with Tim Sophies, the Libertarian candidate, Susan Wild, the Democratic candidate, and Marty Nostein, the Republican candidate for Congress. Okay, let's move on to health care. It's well documented that Americans spend far more per capita on health care than any other country, and yet basic measures of health show that we are much less healthy than most of those other industrial democracies. For me, I simply don't understand why access to health care is a responsibility of employers. I've just never understood that. That arrangement results in companies competing with each other by trying to outdo the denial of benefits to their employees or the reduction of costs to those employees. So don't you think that we can find a better way to ensure that Americans have access to health care? I think we're starting with you this time, Tim.
Yeah, absolutely, I do. I think, first of all, taking a broader view of the healthcare system, this is something that's gotten more and more centralized in Washington by both parties. Medicare Part D was the Republicans under Bush. Obamacare was obviously under the Democrats. That's just in the last 20 years. So both parties have consistently put the center of gravity more to Washington, where I think it should be moving out from Washington towards the states to take more responsibility for these things. Now, I personally think there's different ways that different states could approach this issue. I think personally, I'd like to see more free market solutions to some of these issues. I mean, for instance, as a journalist, an eye-opening experience for me was when I did a piece about LASIK eye surgery, where this is something that this exists in the free market, where people go and they just pay for it and they get this procedure done. It's something that helps countless people who need it. And
who
this
can
is something
it?
Well, yeah, but that's the thing. The price of it has gone down. It's gone down over the past 10 years. Because that's what happens when in markets. That's what happens. There are more options for better things at a cheaper price.
Okay, Susan Wild.
Let me start by saying that I absolutely believe that healthcare is a right, not a privilege. I think that we have to get employers out of the healthcare market. It's bad for employers and it's bad for employees. Every year, employers, particularly small businesses, struggle with, are they going to give their employees some sort of increase in their wages, or are they going to pay for their health insurance benefits, which get higher and higher every year? Every year, employees take the brunt of the fact that even if they do get an increase in their wages, it probably isn't a real net increase because their health care costs have gone up by just as much. We have to explore more efficiencies in medical care. We have to for instance, Medicare is not allowed to negotiate drug prices with Big Pharma. That's ridiculous. The Veterans Administration is. Why doesn't Medicare? And why don't we allow Medicare to? We absolutely must provide health care as a right, not a privilege. And I think that we have to move to a model that gets employers out of that process. And the last thing I'll say is that keeping in health insurance companies in the role that they currently are allows them to dictate the cost of medical care. And that's a fundamental problem in our system. We're the only first world country that does not provide health care to its citizens as a matter of right.
Martin Nostein, your opinion. Yeah.
You know, health care costs have risen drastically over the last 4 or 5 years, over 100%. And it's hurting the average family. It's hurting working class families. And it's something that, you know, we're not going to be able to fix it today having a discussion around this table. This is a big issue. I do think Washington needs to stay out of it. I do agree with Tim on open markets and driving that cost down. But this is something that's hurting everyday families. It's something that I myself have, experienced. Healthcare costs are now costing more than mortgages. That's something that's very, very sad to say here in America. You would never guess that, 20 years ago. But healthcare is definitely an issue. There's, a lot of different things we can do. My personal thought is, opening up competition to bring that cost of healthcare down.
Okay, let me move on to a real hot button. Not that the questions we've already been dealing with aren't hot, but why does this country have a race problem? And what can a member of Congress do about it? I think we're with Susan this time. Susan Wild.
I think there are many reasons that we continue to have a race problem. I grew up I was a child of the 60s. So I saw the civil rights movement, and I'm discouraged by how little progress we've made since that time. I think that a lot of it has to do with a perversion of priorities in this country. I think it has to do with the things like the way we handle the criminal justice system. I think the criminal justice system is inherently weighted against minorities. And I also think that we have this widespread perception of minorities that is wrong. When you're judged by the worst member of your race, then chances are you're in a minority. A lot of it has to do with, I have to say, what's happening at the federal level now with this president and this administration isn't doing anything at all to change prevailing attitudes about race relations. But I think that there have to be changes in income equality. We have to provide better educational opportunities. We have to work on the minimum wage. We have to get people out of the inner city and into areas where they can find jobs. We have to provide better transportation so that people can get to jobs and can get to school and those kinds of things. It's a fundamental reflection of many of the things that we don't have, that we don't set as priorities in this country.
Marty Nostein.
Yes, I think education is key. Education in the inner cities is something that's going to help alleviate this problem. You know, if we can start educating our children at a young age, letting them know that there's opportunities out there. One of the things that we really struggle with here in the Lehigh Valley is the fact that nearly 1,000 students don't graduate high school after they reach ninth grade. That's a big problem. That's a huge problem. We need to fix that problem. And how are we going to do that? We need to make sure that these kids have an opportunity for success. I think we've been misinforming our youth for many years. You know, you do not need a college education to earn a living wage or to have a career. There are trades and skilled positions out there, and if we can do something and get into the inner cities and start creating programs, apprenticeship programs for our youth, and educating them and getting them jobs, I think is going to help tremendously.
Tim Sophies.
I don't know. I mean,
I love it.
I don't know. I mean, but here's the thing. I mean, I'm a white guy who grew up in Bethlehem. I mean, if I could answer the question of how to solve race relations in the United States, I should be getting a Nobel Prize. I mean, what I can say is that I think the best thing I can possibly do is listen to people who feel like they've suffered and who have had prejudicial treatment. I certainly would agree with Susan. I think criminal justice reform would be a good start. Talking about different approaches to mandatory minimums and the drug war, which disproportionately affect those communities. But overall, I think the best thing that I can do is just listen and have more conversations with people who aren't like me.
You know, I just to remind the listeners, you're listening to Lehigh Valley Discourse on WDIY. This is 88.1 FM. A full member station of NPR, Neil Heaver would want to make sure I said. And, you know, I'm doing this congressional discussion. You know how much I would have loved to have been on your side of these microphones and have this discussion as a candidate. Something I always thought I was going to do as a kid growing up, and it just never came about. So I envy the three of you, and I appreciate the hard work it's taking you to present yourselves. You got to put yourself basically standing naked in front of people. You know, and that's tough. So I think you need to hear that. At least I, as a voter, just a regular voter, appreciate what you're trying to do. You're listening to Lehigh Valley Discourse on WDIY. It's time for another break. I hope you're enjoying this conversation and that you'll stick with us. We have another 20 minutes or so to go.
The many choices and real voices on WDIY are made possible with support from our generous, sustaining members. An automatic monthly gift of $10 on your credit card is an easy way to become a WDIY member and support the programs you love. Set up your monthly sustaining membership gift today. Call 610-694-8100 extension 7 or visit wdiy.org. Thank you.
Okay, glad you're back. This is Lehigh Valley Discourse on WDIY. I'm your host, Alan Jennings. I have the privilege and honor of having three brave souls in the studio with me, Marty Nostein, Tim Sophies, and Susan Wild, who are running to represent you in Congress. And we need you desperately to be paying attention because our problems are not getting any better anytime soon, it seems. So we've been covering a whole bunch of issues. I have a question that I think is probably a curveball that you won't get very many times. But the question is Amazon good or bad for this country? I think we're with you, Marty. Sorry about that.
Yeah, no, it's okay. I think Amazon is good for this country. I do. For me, And I think for a lot of consumers, being able to purchase products, have them delivered to your door, this is the new age that we are living in. I was talking to friends of mine out in California, and they called me. They said, "Where are you?" I said, "Well, I'm at the grocery store. I'm at Wegmans." They said, "Who goes to grocery store anymore?" So we still do in Lehigh Valley. So it's even getting to the point now where people are ordering groceries online. So, you know, e-commerce, purchasing online is now part of our economy. It's the way that technology has changed. And I'm sure in 20, 30 years, we'll be having a discussion about another company that's come along and we'll be asking the same sort of question to ourselves.
I call this the Amazonation of the country. Tim Sophies, what's your opinion?
Amazon's great for this country. Yeah, I mean, this is to see the innovations that happen are really pretty remarkable. I mean, think about, I took a trip recently in which I went to a restaurant in an Uber and then took the Uber back to my Airbnb and then came home and had my Amazon package sitting on the porch. I mean, that's...
You're younger than 40, aren't you?
A little bit. Not that much. But anyway, yeah, that's amazing. I mean, that who could have even imagined that even a few years ago? So these, you know, I think it's a wonder to watch, and it makes all of our lives better to have services like this. So I think it's just the best thing we can do is stay out of the way and see what the next one is that comes along.
Susan Wild.
Well, e-commerce is here to stay, but since you asked about a specific company, I'm going to answer that question specifically. Look, I'm an Amazon Prime member. I've seriously reconsidered that every year, and probably this year will stop being one. And the reason is that I think there's ample evidence that Amazon is not good to its workers, and that it does not pay decent wages. And that concerns me very much. The other thing that there are a lot of very good companies out there, and since you ask, and since I do believe that e-commerce is here to stay, I will tell you there are alternatives to Amazon, and I've started using them more and more. I'm not going to plug any particular companies now. But I also very much worry about the fact that we've become a society where we have less and less human interaction. And I think that is at the root of some of the problems that we have today. You know, we used to go out to the store, we used to go out to the bakery, we used to go up to the mall and buy an outfit. All of these things are good for our economy, but more important than that, they're good for humankind. So I am not a big fan of Amazon, even though I recognize that e-commerce is here to stay. I'm not particularly impressed by its work practices.
I don't want to coach the three candidates for Congress because they're perfectly capable of understanding these issues themselves. But if I were running for Congress, I think I would make student debt one of my top issues. I have an adjunct opportunity at Lehigh University, and I'm telling you, these kids are graduating with mortgage payments as college loans. If I had a single issue battle that I could wage, it would be on this one, and I would encourage everybody with a student debt to stop making payments, put those payments in escrow, and just force a crisis in the system so that somebody does something about the fact that kids' lives are being destroyed by the cost of going to college. So if I could get a response to the question of what do you do about student loans, student debt, and the cost of a college education in America. And I think we're now at Susan to go first.
Student loan, you know, I referred in my opening remarks to my own student loan that I had back when I was in law school. When I graduated from law school, I had about less than $30,000 in student loan debt. And I thought I was going to be broke for the rest of my life. But I had a loan that had very favorable terms. This was 1982. And I paid it back at the rate of $101 a month. And by the time I was 40, it was paid off, and it was very manageable while I was working. Students nowadays don't have that opportunity. Young lawyers that I work with are graduating with more than $100,000 in debt. And forget the lawyers. Where I get my hair done, the young woman who washes my hair has told me that she has $30,000 in student loan debt. Because she tried one career before she went to beauty school. She doesn't see any way out of that problem. We've absolutely got to work on, number one, making college and higher education more affordable. And it's not just about college. It's about apprentice programs and training programs. And we have to restructure student loan debt. The idea that students graduate now with loans that are higher interest than my mortgage or my car loan is outrageous, and we absolutely have to do something about it and help those younger people.
Marty Nostein.
Yeah, the cost of education is skyrocketing, and a lot of these students that have a lot of debt are, you know, believe it or not, a lot of the students who don't even graduate from college. Mm-hmm. So there are for-profit universities out there who are, You know, they have great, catchy marketing plans. They encourage kids to get into college who might not supposedly need to go to college. They give them a shot. They put a lot of debt on their lap. They give them another shot, put more debt on their lap. And at the end of the day, you know, they can't get a degree, they can't get a job, and they leave with tens of thousands of dollars of student debt. You know, and on the other end, you have professionals, doctors and lawyers that graduate with tremendous student debt. But I believe, you know, their rate of not paying back their student debt is less than 1%. I mean, these are professions that these people get good jobs, high-paying wages, high-paying jobs, and they can pay back their student debt. It's some of the other, in my opinion, the students that do not graduate with a job right out of graduation, or those who can't complete their college education, who are the ones that have the most of the debt on them. So for-profit universities are a big problem in this. You know, they're taking the student debt, they're paying it to their shareholders, which I have a problem with. You know, they're encouraging people to enroll in classes and in college, which normally we should encourage them to take a skilled labor position. So, you know, this is a bit of a problem, but the cost of education has skyrocketed. You know, two kids, myself, at Penn State, and the cost of education is very, very high and something we need to look at.
Tim Sophies.
Why does everybody need to go to college? That's the first question I think that's important about this. We've gotten kind of out of whack in America, where it's just considered the next step after high school, where every single person is expected to go to college, where it's just not for everybody, first of all. And there's a lot of great jobs. I've done stories about, you know, people who start at $60,000 a year jobs as welders or machinists, where these jobs are sitting empty and could be filled if we didn't put such a priority on everybody going to college. The second question I think is important to ask is, why is college so expensive? The prices of college keep going up and up and up. One of the reasons is that government keeps giving out more and more and more loans. So these colleges know that the federal government is going to keep giving kids more and more loans. So they keep making it more and more and more expensive to go to college. And I mean, these colleges now, by the way, are places where, you know, there are like climbing walls and spas and all of these ridiculous sort of amenities, where they're competing for people to go there, and they know that it's not necessarily the best thing for them. And again, the price is going to keep going up.
One of the most stark, I guess, is, I'm not sure that's the right word, but one of the most, arguably the most significant ways you're going to be making decisions is on how you spend the taxpayers' money. You know, budget priorities, you know, really say a lot about where your priorities are. So let's say you're on the Appropriations Committee and you have to make cuts in order to meet the requirements of the House Budget Committee's budget. Which of the following do you cut? A new weapons system, the president says we need. The IRS, which means we will collect less revenue, leading to more spending cuts. Or early childhood education. I think we're back to you, Tim.
I mean, I think the answer is yes. We have $21 trillion in debt. $21 trillion. That is so completely unsustainable. It should be probably the top thing we talk about in almost any conversation about the federal government. We need to make cuts across the board. I mean, I think, you know, people on the left are, I'll frame it this way. I think cuts should happen across the board, whether we're talking about programs that are no longer efficient and are completely unsustainable, or if we're talking about military spending, where we spend more than the next seven countries combined on military spending. And these are the big drivers of debt that we cannot sustain it. We have more than $1 trillion now deficits out to the horizon. When the supposedly conservative Republican Party took over, who has been complaining about deficits and debt, rightfully so, for all of the President Obama's administration, what's the first thing that they do? They cut taxes, and then increase spending to the point that now, again, we're back to trillion-dollar deficits that we had a few years ago. So I think, look, it's going to be difficult, and it's going to be – we have to have an adult conversation about sensible cuts that we have to make to balance the budget. And everything is going to have to be reduced to an extent.
Susan Wild.
That's an impossible question for me to answer without seeing the budget as a whole. You can't address the budgetary problems that we have in this country on a piecemeal basis. I don't think that cuts across the board are what's called for. There are some programs that are very, very underfunded. Early childhood education is one of them. That's clearly not one where I would make cuts. But beyond that, I think without seeing the budget as a whole, I can't answer that question.
Marty Nostein.
Well, I mean, we can't even create a budget, and then we haven't had one in a long time. So, you know, this is a big issue with our government. We do not have a revenue problem. We have a spending problem, and it is across the board. And it's something that is just driving us into massive deficits. Over $21 trillion of deficit is something that is just absurd. So for us, you know, as citizens, you know, you hear this and you read this and you just think, how is this possible? But it is possible. You know, if we continue to create budgets with CRs and omnibus spending bills, which, you know, just drive up more debt, I mean, we need to reel this back in. We need to start creating real budgets and start living by those budgets. And at that point, then we can start looking at things with a scalpel and deciding where we're going to start cutting.
Congressman Dent is almost legendary. And so I'm curious, you're kind of going to be in the shadow of Charlie for a little while. And so the question would be, what are you going to do different than Charlie Dent? And what are you going to do that Charlie Dent did that you think was of value and of some, you know, kind of leadership guidance for you? Where are we? Susan, are you next? Susan Wild.
Sure, I'll take it. I think that as a member of Congress, I want to forge my own path. I'm not looking to live in the shadow of somebody else. My focus, as I've said several times today, very much would be on working families of the 7th District. And by working families, by the way, I'm talking about people who depend on a paycheck or a retirement check for a living, not people who inherit their wealth or have vast sums of corporate dividends and that kind of thing. So my focus would very much be on that segment of the population, which, by the way, I think is the bulk of the population of the 7th District. We are very much a working families kind of area. And the one thing that I will say that I think that Charlie Dent did quite well was that he was very dignified and very civilized. He generally was willing to listen to his constituents. If they called him, somebody on his staff or he would respond. And I would strive to certainly follow that example. But my priorities in Congress would be different than those of Mr. Dent.
Marty Nostein.
Yeah, you know, Congressman Dent has been an institution of the Valley for a very long time. He's got a great career in the world of politics. You know, he does leave some big shoes to fill, incredible constituent service. He was a man that I believe, you know, always made sure that his district was looked after and you know, and did what's right for the people of the district. At times he went against the flow, and other times, you know, he caught a tailwind and wrote it out. But I agree. You know, you're going as your own individual. You're going to, you know, represent the entire Lehigh Valley, and everybody's going to have a little segment of what they really want to focus on. For me, education is key. It's huge. Infrastructure is huge. Our jobs and economy, these are all big things that we need to take a look at here to make sure that this district is well positioned for the next couple of years, for the future.
Tim Silfies.
So I clearly have a different philosophical outlook than Congressman Dent does about the role of government. So that's an obvious difference that I would vote consistently for things that represented common sense, limited government. Congressman Dent, I like his demeanor. I think he was a calm person who communicated very civilly, which I think I would try to emulate. And I think he was able to pull support from kind of across the political spectrum in his races, which is something that I'm feeling now in my race. I mean, I think I'm in a unique position that I have progressives who work on my campaign. I have conservatives, independents. We have people across the ideological spectrum who are on the campaign and supporting it, because I really do think I'm in a unique position to not have to answer to either one of the major parties, and to not be a part of that machine. I think is an important asset that I can bring to the table, to be an independent voice that represents principles and the people.
Well, we're running out of time. I got to tell you, I hope people are listening. Sometimes I think, why do candidates run negative? I think they run negative because it works. And that's the voters' fault for letting that happen. So, I tried to do this show in a way that was fair to all the candidates and kept us above the kind of ugliness that so often characterizes elections. So I want to thank each of you for doing this what I think is the right way. Tim Sophies, the Libertarian candidate, Susan Wild, the Democratic candidate, Marty Nelstein, the Republican candidate, thank you very much for your good work, and good luck to all of you. Folks, this is a democracy. That means you get to participate. Please do. On November 6th, do the right thing and vote. I'm Alan Jennings. This is WDIY, Lehigh Valley Discourse. I'm your host. I appreciate your sitting in, and I appreciate all the three of the candidates. Thanks, and good luck to all three of you.
Thank you, Alan.
Thanks, Alan. Thank you, Alan.